Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Welcome, brothers and sisters. Welcome once again to Dare to Win. Dare to Win, the Uplifting Us Economic Empowerment Development Incorporative Program. Thank you so much for joining us this evening on our regular Thursday night broadcast. We are so pleased to have you with us and pleased to have your thoughts, your ideas, your comments, and to have your energy. This evening, we're going to be discussing, is it time for Black people to pool our money and do for self? Is it time? Is it time for us to start doing for self? Please ponder that question a moment, and we'll be back with you after a short music interlude to start our dialogue on that very deep and important topic. And once again, this is Dare to Win, and I am Sister Nanana, your host for the evening, and so pleased to have you with us. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Maryland from Arrested Development, and I come here tonight to give thanks to the rain. So brothers and sisters, please put down your umbrellas. You won't be needing those today. Look to the clouds with the most rain coming from it. For without the rain, there's no me and there's no you. I said a drip drop, a drip drop, drip drop. Viva, bum, bum, bum. Drip drop. Let it rain, let God's water feed me. The water of life, mentally rinsing me. Physically drenching me, most of frowning upon your arrival, but I need you for survival. And when you follow my community, yeah, I run outside to properly greet you. Let it rain, take my pain, I'm glad to meet you. Fill my eyes with a colorful rainbow. Every drop that hits me fills me with unmeasurable amount of security, knowing my God acknowledges me as this each drop of rain is aimed toward me. My Lord, thanks for life. My Lord, thanks for life.
Thank you,
yeah.
My rain.
It's rainy revolution. It's rainy solution. It's rainy revolution. 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 To the ghetto, the rain, the time I feel is mental. The goal of this rain I feel is spiritual. Saw through the eyes of the afflicted people. The eyes are hard as a million tombstones. Marked with the names of the millions of kin thrown to the dust that gave them their color skin. Fade to black is the scene they're embalmed in. The rain, many nights have witnessed her receiving the sperm of a brother into a sister. Blessing that life to guaranteed existence, a conscious baby for a black resistance. I feel the rain enhances the revolution. It reminds us of a spiritual solution. It reminds us of an unnatural, supernatural solution.
Good evening once again, and welcome. Welcome to Dare to Win. This is a sober discussion of the systems and institutions necessary for real, real economic empowerment for our people. The systems and institutions of the past have not worked. New models are required, and us lifting us is leading the way to build this new economic paradigm. It's not enough that we struggle. We must build and maintain ways and means that ensure our success, not only for ourselves, but for future generations. And as us lifting us, we say that we dare to win. Thank you for joining us this evening. Once again, I'm Sister Nanana, and I'm a board member with Us Lifting Us. And I have the honor this evening of hosting the Thursday night broadcast. We're here every Thursday starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and we discuss timely and important topics that affect us, that affect our community, our nation of people. And this evening we're going to be talking about, is it time? Is it time for Black people to pool our money and to do for self? And joining us this evening to help lead us through that dialogue is another Us Lifting Us board member, Brother Kambizi. And I'm going to invite you now, Brother Kambizi, to make yourself known and welcome our listening audience.
Good evening, Sister Nanana. It's good to be with you tonight. And welcome. And we're glad to be able to share with the Us Lifting Us listening audience. I want to thank you for the musical lead-in. We are the drum talking about freedom and reigning revolution by Arrested Development. We are very clear that music is one of the spiritual weapons that enable us to wage this struggle. And yes, we do dare to win. And pooling our money is one of the critical steps necessary if we're going to win. So I'm glad to be sharing with you tonight and look forward to the conversation.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. And you've said some very key things this evening, particularly around pooling our money. That's a major stepping stone and a major part of the plan that Us Lifting Us has put together. And for those of you who are members of Us Lifting Us that are listening in and joining us this evening, welcome to you, and certainly pleased to have you and proud to have you as a active member of Us Lifting Us. And for those of you who may be listening for the first time, who have not joined our economic co-op at this point, you can go to the website, usliftingus.com, usliftingus.com, and get more information about our economic co-op and what it's all about, the plan for the future, and the plan to pass the machinery of economic development on to future generations. We certainly invite you to do that and to stick and stay with us throughout this dialogue that we're going to have this evening. So let's go ahead and get started, Brother Kimbizi. The question for today is, for this evening, is it time? Is it time for Black people to pool our money and to do for ourselves? That's certainly a provocative question and one I judge that warrants a lot of exploring. So how would you respond to that, and what would you have to share with us on that subject of, is the time now?
Thank you, Sister Nanana. I've been reflecting and thinking with the recent confirmation of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. Black people in the United States must ask ourselves the question, are the right-wing forces in America attempting to turn the clock back to segregation? In other words, are there forces working to take America back to the 1950s and prior? Lerone Bennett, writing in Ebony magazine in October of 1981 in an article entitled The Second Time Around, asked the same question. In 1981, he told us that this country could very easily return to segregation. He reminded us that the Supreme Court, under Chief Justice Earl Warren, that had overturned the 1896 Plessy versus Ferguson decision making segregation legal, was an anomaly. In other words, the Supreme Court, for most of its history, reinforced both slavery and segregation. Now, with Kavanaugh added to the court, there is a solid, hardcore, right-wing group of justices who may very well overturn Roe v. Wade, making abortion illegal again, that may further weaken civil rights and voting rights protection for Blacks, Hispanics, Muslims, and others, and further weaken organized labor and worker rights. This is the future staring Black people in the eye. Many Black people are under the illusion that America is serious about pursuing liberty, freedom, and equality for all of its citizens. We, the people, believe that it's an inalienable right for everyone to have liberty, freedom, and equality. But we should note that if we look at our history, there are some critical dates that that we should have at the top of our mind every day. In 1857, the Supreme Court handed down the infamous Dred Scott decision, which said that Black people in America have no rights that white people have to respect. That was 1857. And that decision has never been overturned. Then in 1877, Black people fell victim to the infamous Hayes-Tilden Compromise that allowed the Republicans to keep the White House, but in return they had to withdraw federal troops from the South, thus ending the Reconstruction period and allowing the defeated Confederate whites in the South to take power again in the South and snatch back black civil and voting rights that had just been won. In 1896, the Supreme Court in Plessy versus Ferguson handed down the separate but equal decision that upheld segregation in the country, which lasted until 1954 when overturned by the Brown versus Topeka Board of Education decision. In spite of this dark history, black people still managed to build thriving black communities across the country by doing what? By doing for self. So it strikes me that we should, John Henry Clark said that history is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is a compass they use to find themselves on the map of human geography. It tells them where they are, but more importantly, what they must be. And I would argue that first and foremost, we must be poolers of our money to build the institutions that will guarantee our survival and our ability to thrive. But Sister Nanana, think about this. In this country, even before the United States was formed, beginning in 1619, at least that's the date that they say the first ship of enslaved Africans arrived at Jamestown, Virginia. From 1619 to 1865, slavery was the law and the practice and the economic system in this country. So for 246 years, slavery was the economic mode of production. Then from 1896, when the Plessy versus Ferguson decision was handed down, until 1954, that's another 58 years of legal segregation. So for 304 years, this country has meant oppression of black people, either in form of direct slavery or in some form of segregation or apartheid. America didn't become a formal country until 1878. And if you look from 1878 to 2018, that's only 230 years. So this country has been enmeshed in slavery and segregation for 74 more years than it even was existing as a formal entity. That's the reality that we have to awaken ourselves to and ask ourselves some very hard questions. How do we protect ourselves? How do we guarantee a future for our children? And one very important answer to that is we've got to get serious enough about ourselves to pool the money that flows through our hands and begin to build the institutions that give us real self-respect. Let me pause there to see if you have questions or comments.
Well, thank you, Brother Kambizi. You have certainly put some very gut-wrenching and eye-opening information out there for those who may have been under the misimpression that America is about the business of ensuring rights and ensuring that everyone is treated equally, so on and so forth. We have to be realistic in understanding that that is not what America is about, and that we have to be about the business of taking care of ourselves. I totally see that, and the information that you've provided with the chronology of the various events helps to make that very clear. And I just want to take a moment right now and invite the listening audience and those who have already called in. If there is anyone who has a comment or would like to share a thought, please press 1 on your dial. Please press 1 on your dial. And for those who would like to join the conversation, please dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789, and then press 1 on your dial. and we will certainly open the microphone for you to make your comments and to add to this discussion. For many of us, Brother Kimbizi, I think that the whole notion, the whole thought that very possibly the return of segregation is something that is on the forefront, that is on the horizon, and that can definitely happen, as well as further circumventing of what we believe to be our rights, that this is a definite reality. I think for many of us, that's very off-putting, and it hasn't been in the forefront of our minds, but with your dialogue and information that you've provided, it's definitely in the forefront right now. And I see that we have a caller who would like to make a comment or ask a question. The caller was 3440, last four digits, 3440. Your microphone is open. Please go ahead, tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Greetings, brother and sister. This is Brother Shabaka up in Baltimore, Maryland. Thank you for allowing me to. Thank you. Just wanted to make a question, I guess, in the form of a comment. But you were talking about from the period of 1865 onward that, you know, we had segregation. Now, segregation, as it was practiced, was not necessarily to make two equal societies separated, but the mere fact of segregation was to make sure that the inferior status of those who were enslaved were sustained, because sometimes we're led to believe that the separation of us made us unequal, but not necessarily. It was the condition by which we were separated and segregated to sustain an inferior position, as opposed to being together integrated and, I guess, well off. Could you comment on that, please? And thank you.
No, thank you for the question and the area to open up that that particular segment of dialogue. Brother Kimbizi, would you have a comment for Brother Shabaka concerning segregation, and what was the real intent behind that? How did that work?
I want to thank Brother Shabaka for calling in and raising that very important question and posing it to us, because it actually is an excellent segue into some additional information that I wanted to share. He's absolutely right. The separate but equal was not intended for black folks in this country to be equal with white folks. No. What was the intent, as he alluded to, was to maintain us in the position of being inferior to white folks, third-class citizens, not even second-class citizens, and to guarantee that from an economic standpoint, we would be hobbled, or so they thought. And that leads me to the what I wanted to share. We think about it was the Civil War in 1865 that brought an end to slavery, quote unquote, brought an end to slavery. And we saw the passage of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. The 13th Amendment, we know, ended, abolished slavery. The 14th gave us citizenship, and the 15th gave us the right to vote. They were all ratified by 1870. So by 1870, the former enslaved black folks supposedly were free and able to become self-determining. But think about it. In seven short years, less than a decade, the Hayes-Tilden compromise, and the only reason, the only protection that blacks had from 1870 to 1877 was the presence of federal troops in the South holding white folks in check. so that we could vote, we could do the things that supposedly the Constitution extended to us. In 1877, that came to a screeching halt. The federal troops were withdrawn from the South, the Klan was unleashed, and white power came roaring back in major ways. Black folks that had been serving in the legislatures and other chambers of government were literally drugged out of those offices, and the wave of repression was unbelievable. So that's the backdrop as we come from 1877 up to 1896, when this separate but equal decision is handed down by the Supreme Court in Plessy versus Ferguson. The thing that's important for black folks to keep uppermost in our minds is that even under those conditions, starting in the late 1800s through the early 1900s, black folks organized themselves into self-sustaining communities by pooling their monies and building the institutions that they needed. Now, yes, we were segregated. We were on the other side of the tracks or at the edge of this urban area, somewhere supposedly out of sight, which worked out to our advantage. Because in places like Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the city of Greenwood, from the early 1900s up to 1921, black folks built what came to be called Black Wall Street. Hundreds of businesses, law offices, doctor's offices, restaurants, hotels, real estate developments. Black people in Greenwood were so prosperous that they even had their own airport, and at least six rich people had airplanes. So I mean, they were living in well-constructed brick houses. Black folks were doing A-OK by pooling their resources and working together economically and politically to sustain themselves. So many of us are familiar with Greenwood, Tulsa, Oklahoma. We also know that in 1921, the whites got so jealous that they created a pretext and they went in there and waged a massacre and killed a bunch of our folk and burned the entire community to the ground just because they're just that insecure emotionally. They couldn't stand the thought of black people surviving and thriving apart from them, proving that, you know, we didn't necessarily need them to be successful. So that was Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma. In Durham, North Carolina, there was a community called Haiti. They spelled it H-A-Y-T-I. And this community became the home of the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company. They also built Lincoln Hospital. They had over 200 businesses. So that was in Durham, North Carolina. There was Jackson Ward in Richmond, Virginia, founded by free enslaved Africans after the Civil War. There was Fourth Avenue District in Birmingham, Alabama. And then, of course, those of us in Georgia are familiar with Sweet Auburn Avenue in Atlanta. We are familiar with the thriving community in Harlem, New York, and in Memphis, Tennessee, and Southside Chicago, all of the places where there were large gatherings of African-American people, we built very thriving and successful black communities, both economically and politically. And so it's just time that we are reawakened to the fact that what we've done before, we can do it again. And this time, because we have more tools at our disposal, we can do it even better. So I hope I addressed Brother Shabaka's point. But, yeah, they didn't mean it to be equal, but we took it off in a whole different direction by pooling our money and doing for self.
And, you know, the whole concept of pooling money is so integral to what we need to do going forward. I want you to say more about that as we continue. I do see that we have another caller who'd like to either ask a question or make a comment. Let's go ahead and take that, and then we're going to have a short interlude break with some music and then come back. But let's take this question or the comment from the caller here, 4777, caller 4777. Please tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Brother Delano. I'm a first-time caller here in Orlando, Florida. And
welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to ask a question about the organization because I've been listening to the archive calls, but is the attempt by us lifting us to recreate those thriving communities that we had before, like Black Wall Street and South Carolina?
So your question is the intent of us lifting us to recreate those communities? And so
that's
I'm going to give a response. Thank you for your question, brother. And we are always thrilled to have a first-time caller. I'm going to make a comment and ask Brother Kambizi to comment as well. The intent of us lifting us, and I think our mission is indicated on the website, is to create and to put into place the mechanism for economic self-sufficiency that we can pass on to future generations. And in doing that, we have already started opening businesses. Cafe Ulu is now open in Atlanta, and it is a sterling model of what cooperative economics looks like. As far as actually recreating a community, we have to realize that our communities have shifted from what they were many years ago, that we may not have the large conglomerates of people all living in one geographic area, that we are more dispersed, but that we can still come together as a community, as a nation of people, and pool our resources. So, yes, we can create the type of prosperity that we shared during those times in those communities that we have talked about, but not necessarily all have to be in the same geographic area in order to do that. And there's so many things that we have now in terms of technology and other ways to communicate and to be in touch with each other that we can make that happen. And I'm going to invite Brother Kambizi to give a response to that as well.
Okay.
Brother, thank you for an important and excellent question. We in Us Lifting Us are building on the lessons from our past. First of all, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative LLC is a global entity in its outlook and in its operations. So those Black Wall Street communities, basically, as Sister Nanana inferred, were areas where people were in close proximity to each other. They were in, contiguous neighborhoods, and it just made sense for them to do business with each other. In addition to the fact that they were segregated and could not come outside of those communities and operate economically in the white areas. So we're not trying to reproduce that or replicate that, but what we certainly are doing, is learning the lessons from those communities. And it's interesting when you read the history of those communities, is with the exception of a couple of places, well, not a couple, but certainly Rosewood in Florida and Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that were ravaged by, jealous white mobs.
Right.
The other Black Wall Street communities, they they really suffered when during the age of integration. In other words, when blacks were allowed to begin to move out of those communities and spend their dollars in other areas, and they did that, but over time and over probably not that long a time, 10, 15, 20 years, those communities began to languish and ultimately were not what they had once been. In other words, from an economic standpoint, if you don't spend your dollars where you live and you take your dollars outside of that, then wherever you take your dollars, those communities will thrive. And what happens is that our communities suffered anemia. And so we learned that lesson. And our goal is to create a global economy that operates in North America, in the Caribbean, on the African continent, everywhere black folks exist in the diaspora, to be part of this global economy. And the other important point that we have to make on this is that this economic system is a cooperative system. It is a family-centered economic system where everybody that is a member of the co-op has a voice in how co-op business is conducted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's critical if you think about it. If you own shares in Exxon or Delta, for example, and you go to the annual meetings of Exxon and Delta where policy and decisions are made in terms of how the corporation is going to operate, you are able to vote based on the number of shares that you own.
Yes.
So if you show up at the Delta annual board meeting with 10 shares of Delta stock, you have 10 votes. Now, if someone sitting next to you has 1,000 shares of Delta stock and they vote a different way, what happens to your vote? You're overwhelmed by the person with the 1,000 shares, because in those corporations, each share represents a vote.
Right.
In a cooperative environment, we take it differently. Every member has one vote regardless of the amount of shares or co-op units that you own. So if you come to an Us Lifting Us annual meeting and you own 10 units and I show up and I own 5 units and the vote is taken, you have one vote, I have one vote. That's way more democratic than if we had to depend on the number of units that you own to determine the strength of your vote. In other words, when we come to our annual meetings, because this is a cooperative and it's family-centered, it's one person, one vote. And that way we can have an intelligent conversation about what really makes sense for the whole, and we can debate and we can go back and forth. But then when we vote, we're voting based on that every person's value is established. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes,
so
sir.
In that regard, these earlier Black Wall Streets, some of that activity was not necessarily done by cooperatives.
Right.
Where one of the key differences with Us Lifting Us is that this is a family-centered cooperative where, you know, membership determines your voice, not the number of co-op units that you own. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Right. And why I was bringing it up was because back in the past, we had, you know, like we had our own car manufacturing companies and things that the community needed. So it would also, if anything else, be geared towards fulfilling the needs of markets that our people already are dominate as consumers.
You already know the answer to that.
Like the hair care market, that to name one.
Yes, absolutely. You make the very obvious point that how is it that other communities are controlling the very markets that we are the dominant consumers in?
Right.
So to your question, yes. those are markets that we definitely will operate in. I would just point you to, if you haven't taken a look at it, the Mondragon Cooperative in the northern region of Spain, where they started with a manufacturing facility, but they branched out to a credit union, to a consumer megastore, a research and development arm. They're operating in excess of 250 businesses, all geared toward meeting the needs of their people. And that would be the focus that we would have also. Go ahead, Sister Nanana.
Yeah, we're going to take a short break right now, and then when we come back, Brother Kimbizi, we're going to ask you to share some information concerning our current global campaign that we have for subscription and building membership, and some other details around how to become a member of Us Lifting Up. So let's take a short music break and then come back and hear more details about Us Lifting Up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Welcome back. This is Dare to Win, Us Lifting Us, Economic Development Cooperative, LLC's regular Thursday night broadcast, Dare to Win. Thank you and welcome once again. And for those who have called in and would like to ask a question or make a comment, please press 1 on your keypad on your phone. And for those who would like to join us, 929-477-2789 is the number to call, 929-477-2789. And we are here every Thursday evening, 9 p.m., Eastern Time for an hour discussing timely and very important topics that affect us. This evening we have Brother Kimbizi, a board member from Us Lifting Us, talking with us this evening about whether or not it's time. Is it time for us to take that big step forward and do what we need to do in the economic arena? And moving on with that subject, Brother Kimbizi, could you share some details with us concerning the global campaign that Us Lifting Us has launched for subscriptions, as well as some information about membership in Us Lifting Us?
Certainly, Sister Nanana, thank you for that tune by Anita Baker, God Bless the Child That's Got His Own. You know, Billie Holiday made that popular back in her day, and one of the lines was, the strong get more while the weak ones fade, empty pockets never make the grade, God Bless the Child That's Got His Own. That's what we're looking at, this business, this idea of doing for self. And the previous caller who raised the question, you know, are we trying to recreate the earlier Black Wall Street kinds of communities? What we want to do is really to run further with the vision of Marcus Garvey and the UNIA. And if we think back to when Marcus Garvey was building the UNIA with those brothers and sisters that were running with him, they went to build an organization in excess of 4 million members as an international body. And they went to their convention at Madison Square Garden in New York City, I think it was in June of 1920. 25,000 people showed up in New York City for that convention, and that convention ran for the entire month. And one of the things that Marcus was doing was they were selling $5 certificates to capitalize one of their ventures, which was to purchase ships to start the Black Star Line, to engage Africans on the continent and Africans in the United States and throughout the Caribbean in international trade, utilizing their own ships. So what we're thinking about in our strategic campaign, in this global campaign that we are launching, it's a subscription campaign. And the purpose of this is to capitalize our own economic self-determination. For $25 a month, from all who agree that we must do for self, this is the mechanism we are using to pool our massive monetary wealth into a global family-centered economic cooperative owned by us to build the businesses and social infrastructure to thrive through this century and centuries to come. So what we're asking is for people who are ready to do for self, who understand the necessity, the imperative to do for self, and who understand that the first step in that process is pooling our money, we're saying we have launched a campaign where people can subscribe to Us Lifting Us at the rate of $25 a month. Many of us already have subscriptions to other organizations that we feel are important, whether it's an independent radio station, whether it's a news outlet or some other entity that we think is important, we may underwrite their operation with a monthly subscription. Well, we want to do the same thing with Us Lifting Us. For $25 per month, done as an automatic draft, or if you want to use snail mail, you can mail it in every month. That will help us and allow everyone to participate in the work of building this economy that will enable us to move in a very bold way towards economic self-determination. Now, I was reminded as I was looking at the work that Brother Marcus Garvey and the UNIA did, $5 in that day was a huge amount of money. That was a lot of money. But I know if I had been alive in the 1920s, I would have scraped together my nickels, my pennies, my dimes, my quarters to come up with $5 to underwrite that vision. What we're saying to our community in 2018 is $25 a month will undergird the work of building this global economy. if you think about it, every time we have 1,000 people doing $1,000, that's a million. And so with $1.3 trillion flowing through black fingers on an annual basis, we can't say that we don't have the resources. The resources are here. What we have to do is organize those resources. And what we're launching is a $25 a month subscription campaign open to everybody. Come one, come all, and underwrite our own efforts towards economic self-determination. I'll pause there, Sister Nanana. You may have a question or there may be a caller.
Well, not so much a question, Brother Kimbizi, but thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to add a comment. The comment that I have is concerning the subscription campaign. I think it's an excellent way to provide an opportunity for those who are supportive of us lifting us and supportive of the whole concept of cooperative and family economics, who do want to show their support in a very meaningful way, to go ahead and do that. And so I think the subscription campaign is starting out going quite well. And just the idea that we're taking this global, that it is happening all around the globe, that we have people who are becoming members of Us Lifting Us who are in Europe, in places like London and Ireland, and people from Haiti, from Bermuda, people in Canada, in Mexico, in Ghana, that all around the globe, people of Black African descent know and understand that concept of cooperative economics and the benefit of pooling resources, which is very different from the economic environment that we have been exposed to. We've been exposed to capitalism. And so for us to make that shift and that change at this particular juncture is very key and very vital. And I'd like to invite you, Brother Kimbizi, at this point to share a few words about membership in Us Lifting Us, and how does one go about becoming a member?
Thank you, Sister Nanana. To become a member of Us Lifting Us is very simple. You go to the webpage, usliftingus.com. That's USLIFTINGUS.com, and click on the Join tab, and just follow the prompts. You give us some basic information, name, address, how to get in touch with you, and send in, and then click on the membership fee tab. It's $50 to become a member. Annual membership is $50, and then we will receive your application. We'll make sure that you are who you say you are, and your name will be added to the roll. We also encourage our members, as soon as they are able, to begin making contributions to their capital account. In other words, what makes Us Lifting Us work is the pooling of our dollars. So the goal is that we will work towards purchasing a co-op unit, which is $1,000. And for every co-op unit that we are able to purchase, 1,000 co-op units, as I said earlier, equals $1 million. We have in our community, if we're 30 million deep in the United States alone, we're looking at billions and billions of dollars potentially that then can be utilized to build a state-of-the-art educational system for our children, create a national chain of clinics and hospitals to offer preventative and updated modern care for our people who are sick and want to get well. Whatever we deem we want to do, the resources are in our pocket to do it with. The subscription campaign is one mechanism of organizing the money so that we can do the work. The membership also offers people who want to become a member of the co-op the ability to receive dividends when the businesses that we operate are generating surpluses. So that's another exciting point. And the other thing is that the co-op units are transferable to our children and our grandchildren. So we're starting a legacy that will be passed forward to generations not even born right now. And we're hopeful, we believe that this is something that our people have been waiting for the opportunity to jump on board with.
For sure.
So the membership is very simple. Go to the webpage, fill out that information. And then if you're not quite ready to be a member, there's also a donate tab or a subscribe tab. You can click on that, and you can begin making your $25 a month subscription. The same is true for people who want to become members as well as subscribe. And at $25 a month, in a very short period of time, you will have generated $1,000, and you will have also purchased a co-op unit. So this is something that we want to spread to our community by word of mouth, by social media, by just people that you are networking with, are connected to, say, hey, you know, it's time we do for self, and we're going to have to pool our money. This no one is coming to rescue us. Us is it, and us is going to have to lift us. The good news is we've been doing this for the last 400 years in here in the howling wilderness of North America, so we know how to do this. It's just a matter of saying, you know, now is the time to make the decision to take care of ourselves. The last thing
exactly.
that I'll simply say on that, thing, Sister Nanana,
I just wanted to add one point of clarity, Brother Kambizi, as far as the value of a single co-op unit, that value is $1,000, correct?
Correct.
Because I thought I heard. All right. So the value of one co-op unit is $1,000. So, and I'm sorry, you had another comment that you wanted to make?
No, we're good. We're good.
Okay.
There's a lot for us to do. Those of us in the Southeast have just witnessed, oh my gosh, I forgot the hurricane's name already. Florence
Michael?
Came through, and then Michael just came through yesterday, and no one is talking about how global warming is causing these storms to be more intense. And the latest information says that we have about 12 years. As a global family, to get our handle on global warming, or are we going to reach climate catastrophe? So obviously we need leadership on the international, the national, and the local stage. A vehicle like Us Lifting Us not only enables us to organize our money, it enables us to organize our voice. It enables us to organize our presence on the planet to begin to solve the very difficult problems that face the entire global family. And so your participation, even at $25 a month as a subscription, is your way of stepping into or onto the global stage and raising your hand saying, count me in, I'm ready to do my part. Let's take ourselves to the next dimension and expression of
okay.
Black power and black life.
All right. And in winding down right now, I'd just like to say very quickly that we have a sterling example in this point in time of cooperative economics and of the type of effort that can come into reality with Cafe Ulu, which is located in Atlanta. And Cafe Ulu is a sterling example of cooperative economics. Every aspect Cafe Ulu represents the best of cooperative economics. Everything from a place where Cafe Ulu is located, the employees that are in Cafe Ulu, the harvesting of the coffee, the transportation of it, every aspect of Cafe Ulu, we are demonstrating how dollars can pass from one person of Black African descent to another. And going forward, other businesses that we will open will follow that same model. So, you know, we're on it. We have begun. We are inviting others to step up with us. And yes, the time is now. The day is today. We invite you to join the movement and join Ulu and be a part of what we are bringing forth. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. Please join us again next week, same time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, for Dare to Win. We are moving forward. Thank you and good night.
Things that held us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together, we're polishing up our act. Trying to make it, they only push you aside.